A prominent scholar and enlightened sheikh, a widely respected leader who worked to clarify tolerant Islamic teachings, a valued partner in the Muslim-Catholic dialogue, a man who fostered intercultural and interreligious harmony. Those are just a few of the tributes that poured in following the death on March 10th of Sheikh Mohammed Sayed Tantawi, Grand Imam of Al-Azhar in Cairo, the most important centre of learning in the Sunni Muslim world. The 81-year-old cleric, who was appointed in 1996 by Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, died suddenly of a heart attack in Saudi Arabia. He was a revered, though sometimes controversial, leader throughout the Muslim world, but also widely respected by political and religious figures worldwide. In a telegram of condolences on behalf of Pope Benedict, the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, remembers his valuable contribution to the dialogue between Muslims and Catholics for more than a decade.
He leaves the impression of someone who is very honest, very warm and good-hearted, in a way humble, I would say.
That's Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, the Holy See's representative or apostolic nuncio in Cairo. Before his appointment in 2006, he served here in Rome as head of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. I talked to him about the legacy of Sheikh Tantawi and about a possible successor to this prestigious position at Al-Azhar, often called the Vatican of the Muslim world.
Al-Azhar is a very ancient institution. It was founded in the Fatimid area in 969, if I remember correctly. So it's over 1,000 years old. And it is a complex institution. Very often, Sheikh Al-Azhar is taken to be the head of the university. Well, the university is part of Al-Azhar, but there is another person who is the president of the university. It's not Sheikh Al-Azhar. And I'm not sure that the Sheikh Al-Azhar really has a great deal to do with the university as such. But Al-Azhar has also its own schools, a whole network of schools throughout the country in Egypt, teaching normal subjects but concentrating particularly on religious sciences, so the memorization of the Quran. And this leads the students from these colleges to the Al-Azhar, the Faculty of Religious Studies in Al-Azhar. Because you cannot enter Al-Azhar University unless you have the qualifications. So the whole network of schools from primary level right through to secondary level for young boys, as also for young girls, this is a considerable part of the mission of Al-Azhar. There is also the training of imams from different countries. From countries around the world send people to Egypt in order to train to be imams. Of course, they have to start learning Arabic. They may know some Arabic when they arrive, but they do quite often several years of Arabic before they really start on their religious studies. So they can be spending many, many years in Cairo. Sometimes I've heard people saying that they have spent so long in Cairo that they're no longer adapted to their own countries when they go back there. And there is a bit of a concern sometimes about the way that they are trained, that it is not up to date enough, it is not modern enough.
If we look at Sheikh Tantawi himself, he was seen by some as a reformer, wasn't he? Particularly where women's issues are concerned. What would you see as his most significant legacy?
He certainly was a moderate Muslim. I would say that he, as Mufti of Islam, which he held for 10 years before becoming the Sheikh Al-Azhar in 1996, he was perhaps freer to express himself than as Sheikh Al-Azhar, strangely enough. Sheikh Al-Azhar is a government appointment, And so very often Tantawi was criticized by a number of Muslims as being too close to the government. Whether that is true or not, he certainly defended women's rights. He certainly had, you know, took some interesting steps, like saying that if in France you are forbidden to wear the hijab, then you're forbidden to wear it, and don't wear it, that's all. You just conform to the laws of the country where you are living. Of course, that was criticized by some. More recently, his pronouncement against the niqab, where he had to backtrack to a certain extent, because there was a movement against him. But he said, quite rightly, I think, that, you know, a niqab in an all-girls school doesn't seem to make sense. Well, it's difficult to say if he has a legacy. As far as a person, I would say that he leaves the impression of someone who is very honest, very, very warm and good-hearted, in a way humble, I would say. He didn't seem to, you know, give himself airs. I always had an excellent personal relationship with him.
How often did you actually get to meet him, and what kind of discussions were you able to engage in with him?
Well, it's long before I became nuncio, because in 1995, the Council for Interreligious Dialogue set up a committee, a joint committee with Muslim international organizations. And there were two people from Al-Azhar who attended the inaugural meeting, but Al-Azhar was not included in the international organizations because we said Al-Azhar is an Egyptian organization. It has an international outreach, but it remains an Egyptian organization and not an international organization. Well, that didn't please the Al-Azhar, and so after 3 years of negotiations, we set up a special committee. A special committee was set up between Al-Azhar and the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, and that has been meeting every year since 1998. So the first meeting with Sheikh Tantawi was to negotiate about this committee. And I can remember him saying, yes, dialogue is very good, but not theological dialogue. And so I had to explain to him that, well, if theological dialogue doesn't mean that you're going to negotiate on your beliefs. But it could mean trying to understand those beliefs, trying to explain them to one another. But in any case, it shouldn't be seen as a threat. And, well, he perhaps accepted that. But anyway, he certainly backed the dialogue. Since the meetings were to be held 1 year in Rome and 1 year in Cairo, we would meet every 2 years. Now, since I've been here as nuncio, I've had more occasions to go and meet him, sometimes to bring letters, sometimes to introduce visitors. And, for instance, Cardinal Barbarin was here last year, and he went to see Sheikh Tantawi, and he sent a nice letter of condolences for the death of Tantawi, because he'd been impressed by him, as other people had been impressed by him.
He had a very famous visitor, didn't he, in the year 2000. Pope John Paul II came to Al-Azhar on his visit for the Jubilee year. What do you remember most about that, perhaps?
Well, the people do remember it. Of course, I wasn't present myself, but they remember that the impact that John Paul II had on the Al-Azhar, that normally it's a very solemn place and they don't applaud or anything like that, but they were all clapping for John Paul II. The substance, if you like, is not always so deep, but the warmth was there, and the willingness, I think, to meet and to be more open was there on both sides.
Is there anybody, any likely candidate, do you think, who may step into Sheikh Tantawi's shoes? I mean, how does the process for his succession take place?
Well, it's, as I said, the Sheikh Al-Azhar is appointed by the government and therefore essentially by the president. Tantawi himself, as I mentioned, had been mufti before he was given this particular position. It is possible, I suppose, that the present mufti, Ali Al-Gumar, could be considered as a successor, or it may be someone else from within the Al-Azhar structure. There is a committee for Islamic research. It could be somebody out from that committee, one of the sheikhs who is the secretary. It has to be a religious leader, obviously. So it has to be someone who has done the curriculum of religious sciences. But no one seems to say, oh, we're expecting so-and-so to be the appointed. They're all waiting to see who it's going to be.
Do we have any idea when the government may announce this appointment or not?
No. I haven't seen any reference to time at all. Particularly since President Mubarak has been ill, has been operated in Germany, and so is in convalescence. So this may take a bit more time than there isn't a conclave, you know. So people don't gather from around the world to decide who is going to be Sheikh Al-Azhar. This is a government appointment. And I think they will wait until the president is well enough to be able to proceed.
Finally then, what sort of impact do you think this successor might have on the future of this dialogue you were talking about between the Vatican and Al-Azhar?
Well, the present Mufti, Dr. Ali Al-Gumar, has been more involved in dialogue than others since he has been part of the Common Word process. Not with the Holy See, but with the Anglican Church and with other churches. So he might give a greater encouragement to the dialogue and see that it is carried out in, let's say, with a more modern approach. I think that one of the complaints about the dialogue section, there is this Office for Dialogue, which is entrusted to the deputy of Al-Azhar, is that it doesn't receive any money. And so, you know, they have very restricted funding for activities and, in fact, are not really able to do anything at all. So perhaps you could hope that someone new coming in might see that this is important in today's world and see that funding is allocated for it.
My thanks there to Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, the Apostolic Nuncio in Egypt and former President of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue.